Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories. Good morning. Hello. Welcome. It's Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. I'm Jesse. And this is the campus community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from the unceded ancestral territory of the Halkamila Men Squamish-speaking people, who have been here since time immemorial. Today on the show, we've got an interview that our summer programming assistant Stella did with Hilda Nouri about the Queer Food Project, as well as a little bit of music and maybe some other stuff. With me in the studio right now is Dean. Dean, hello.
Hello, hello. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
I'm chilling. It's first day back.
Yeah. Dean, as you may or may not know, is our arts and entertainment coordinator here at the station. And you just got back from Germany.
Yeah. I mean, I was there for Berlin Field School for 2 months. So it's part of like our SFU programming. And so today is like literally my first day back. I'm so jet lagged that I got up at 5 today.
Nice. How was your time at the field school?
Oh, it was amazing. I can't recommend it enough. It was just super, super incredible interdisciplinary arts programming. There was all sorts of stuff to see, like experimental, traditional, just like a whole multitude of worlds in which you can explore the arts.
Seems like the ideal thing to happen at a field school.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Cool. Well, you are, again, taking off right away.
To go back
home for a little bit. But you'll be back towards the end of summer and then into the fall, helping CJSF volunteers connect with the arts.
Yeah, with wonderful arts programs. We actually have a lot of arts programs that I just put up on our Discord. So if you're not on that, I highly, highly recommend it. You don't need a lot of training to cover these events. And a lot of them I can send you to for free. And all you have to do is write a cute little review about what you saw and what you liked about it.
Yeah, it's a great way to get involved, to get sort of to hone or get your first sort of experiences with covering the arts. I know a lot of people here at CJSF, that was sort of their way in, was starting to cover shows and write reviews. And then, you know, the world is your oyster from there. So if people want to get in touch with you come fall, CJSFAE
at
SFU.ca.
Yeah.
And like you were saying, join our Discord. There's links on our website and here at the station, etc. And you can join the community. So do that. We're going to get to that interview shortly here, but first we'll start with a little local music like I like to do. This is the newest single from Devours, the first single off an upcoming, as of yet, untitled or at least unannounced titled LP. This is called A Cruel Fate.
Midnight.
This is CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby Community Radio from Simon Fraser University. My name is Stella, and I am one of the summer assistants at the station. I'm the programming assistant, and you are tuning in to Super Summer Programming, CJSF's weekly summer segment that focuses both on queer communities and the environmental movement. And this week, we will be featuring an interview that I did with Hilda from the Right to Food organization, highlighting the Queer Food Project that she is a part of, as well as other aspects of her work in food insecurity, mental health, and land-based programs. So stay tuned for that. I had a really good time learning about all of these initiatives going on within Right to Food, and I hope you do too. Burnaby is located on the ancestral and stolen territories of the Halkomelem and Squamish-speaking peoples, the lands that they have cared for since time immemorial. Today, I am here with Hilda from Right to Food, and we will be speaking about the Queer Food Project. So, Hilda, could you please introduce yourself to our listeners and tell our listeners a little bit about you as well?
Sure. My name is Hilda Nouri. I live in Toronto. I work for an organization called Right to Food, where I'm a senior program specialist. So I oversee a national youth food and land-based program that's tied to mental health. And then I'm also one of the coordinators of the Queer Food Project, a network of queer food, community food staff across Canada.
Nice. Yeah, so we're going to get a little bit more into the Queer Food Project a bit later in the interview, but first I just want to start off with, what is the goal of Right to Food?
Yeah, the goal of Right to Food is like multifaceted. So Right to Food oversees and directly supports over, I think, 17 community food centers across Canada. So these are just organizations, small and large, in rural and urban areas that run community food programming, anywhere from like food banks to community meals to cooking programs to gardening programs to like advocacy programs. And then we also bring together a network of over 450 community food organizations across the country. So these are just any organizations that offer any sort of food programming and are interested in being in this network that is a great place to share resources, learn together, and have access to like funding opportunities and like educational like training, and just be part of like a collaborative network that can exist on a national scale that can like learn from the diversity of approaches that people are taking all over the country. And then in addition to that, we also have programs that we fund. So one of them is Find Your Food, the program I oversee. That's the one for youth food and land-based activities connected to preventative mental health. Another one is Food Fit, a seniors food program. And then finally, we do advocacy. So we're really lucky to have this national platform. And for us, we don't take that lightly. And so last year, we changed the name of our organization from Community Food Centers Canada to Right to Food. And that's because we wanted to make a more like clear, impactful statement about the work that we do, recognizing that every human everywhere has a right to food, but that there are barriers and systemic like challenges in the world that we live in that prevent folks from getting access to food. And we try to advocate by writing like articles and like newspapers, helping organizations do local community advocacy, writing to like candidates and the federal government when there's opportunity to advocate for better support for food access for folks and for like appropriate cultural access around like hunting in Indigenous communities and access to wild game or Yeah, so many different things.
Nice. Thank you for that answer. That was very comprehensive. And I like that you've changed the name to Right to Food because, yeah, it is quite a statement when a lot of people think it is more of an individualized problem, whereas the right to food is, you know, a very basic human right. So, yeah, I wanted to know a bit more about this concept of food insecurity. And I know y'all address that a lot in one of the programs that you do. So what is food insecurity and why is it such a pervasive and growing issue across Canada? And I know you mentioned systemic factors as well, and I was wondering if Right to Food has identified any systemic factors, or I'd love to hear if you have a personal perspective on that as well.
So like you said, I think it was a great comment to make how food security and food issues and access to food is often a burden that's put on the individual, whereas it's like a systemic issue where the systems that we have in place in our society, like community organizations and the government and the way we structure our society should create ways and that food is accessible to everyone, because it's not about if we have enough food in the world, but just about how it's shared and divided and accessed. And so food insecurity is just acknowledging the experience that individuals don't have access to sufficient food because of different systemic reasons, like tied to their income, tied to their racial background and culture, tied to being a newcomer immigrant and experiencing language barriers, or being disconnected from their cultural foods, not having the appropriate transportation or physical ability to access food. I was just talking to someone who runs an organization where food banks deliver directly to people at home because they can't visit the food bank, and so there's so many ways that people can not have access to food, and so many reasons why, even mental health and general health, like poor health could be this cyclical cycle where you don't have access to good food, but then you're also sick. And that prevents you from being able to leave your house to get good food or to know where to get it. But we see so many specific groups like racialized folks, Indigenous folks, Black people, and queer folks that experience higher rates of food insecurity compared to the rest of the population. And so I feel like it's so important to ask why. Those numbers are different within those groups and do more to address that.
Yeah, definitely. And that ties in so much to the next question I wanted to ask you, actually, of just telling our listeners a bit more about food security insecurity, specifically among the queer community. Why is it overlooked? Why is it exacerbated so much within these communities?
Yeah, so food insecurity exists at twice the rate of amongst to us LGBTQIA plus folks compared to their heterosexual counterparts. And there's not a lot of research and data that has gone into explaining why that is. The most recent numbers of food insecurity amongst queer folks in Canada is from 2022. And so, generally, the first thing I'll say is that there needs to be, more attention given to those numbers and why that exists. And, research and just personal experience and talking to people that work for organizations serving queer folks, I can tell you there's multiple reasons why. Starting off with that, queer folks, they're inherently have less access to wealth and are more likely to live in poverty or not have those same financial supports that their counterparts do because of the experience of coming out and dealing with homophobia in their life and having higher rates of being disconnected from their family, their community of support, or being denied services to something because of their identity. And then that leaves them more vulnerable and more likely to rely on public services for food. And then there's also the experience of like accessing those services, like food banks or meal programs. A lot of the times in communities, those exist in like churches or religious spaces or spaces, like more in like smaller cities or rural areas that are not explicitly welcoming or inclusive of queer people in those spaces. I think like we're really, Breakthrough Food is really lucky enough to work with a lot of organizations across Canada that are like interested in doing this work and making their spaces more inclusive to queer people to come in and feel welcome. And then like the way that we like approach food insecurity and data around food insecurity and the services around food are really heteronormative, like looking at like traditional family structure, using like very like binary gendered language, not like, understanding the alternative ways that queer folks like have their chosen family or recognizing their like pronouns or yeah, just making like inclusive spaces where they see people like themselves, either as staff or volunteers in the spaces that they're entering.
Yeah, I mean, I love that you brought up that there's not enough research on this in the first place, and that happens so often with so many different communities where the people who are the most equity denied or marginalized are the ones who are also the most under-researched. So it just becomes this vicious cycle. And it's great that Right to Food has created, like a project to address some of these gaps, and I wanted to know a bit more about how and why the Queer Food Project was created within Right to Food.
Yeah, so I've been working at Right to Food just over a year and a half, but the Queer Food Project started a few months before I started at this organization. And because I'm a queer person and I have been working in different community food organizations for over like 9 years at this point, I've always connected with other people, like coworkers, volunteers, participants that are in the spaces that I work that are also queer. I feel like there's this like inherent understanding between us. And I think a lot of queer people feel that. So within the Right to Food organization, the queer staff came together to form kind of like a mini group just within the organization, just to have like a space of solidarity and like talking about the things that come up for them. Both in like their work and the world of community food work. And then they realized that this was a really lovely chance to open this kind of group up to our network that we work with. We're so lucky that we work with 450 plus community food organizations across Canada, and we're more than sure that a lot of the staff that work at these organizations identify as queer or there's specific queer programming that's run. And we'd love to be able to connect all those folks to just create like a safe space where people could talk about what they're doing or ask questions and like learn from each other, but then also like engage in conversation that could like lead to us like creating things like projects or like mapping something or like sharing stories more publicly. So the Queer Food Project has been in existence for like 2 years now. And what it looks like is we meet quarterly, virtually. There's over 200 members that are part of it. And they come from such like diverse organizations. Either they're just queer staff working at a community food organization, or they lead a queer food program at their organization, or they just want to learn more. And then we've also, had like in-person workshops and like working meetings and yeah, it's still like very young, but growing. And I think it's just really special to just have a space to connect these two things, like food and like staff at community food organizations and like queerness. And it could like mean so many things too, from like on a theoretical to like academic to like very practical community, creative, like artistic level.
Mm-hmm. That would be great if you could expand a little bit on that, of like why it is so important to have these queer spaces within movements for food security, but also just in general, like more queer spaces and why they're important.
Yeah, I think, yes, what that makes me think of is like some of the things we've talked about in the Queer Food Project meetings. So a lot of people in the group have identified wanting more resources to train their own staff or volunteers in how to make an inclusive space for queer folks, that they're often like one of the only queer staff at their community food organization. And it's a lot of burden on them to constantly like advocate for the queer people that come into that space or for themselves. So they just need more like resources that are more curated to like a community food setting. And like, you know, that can look like so many different things, with like, you know, understanding and acknowledging pronouns, to like breaking down like gendered divisions of like labor in a kitchen or a garden, to like acknowledging like the history that like queer folks have, or like and racialized folks have with food and like farming, and just like this inherent idea that like communities and like food is like so much a part of like queer identity and queer culture, and those are like tools that queer people have like used to like bring people together for so long. So that there's like a different approach to those things. Another thing that we're working on is like a mapping project where we're trying to map out all the queer food programs within our network across Canada. And people are doing really lovely things, like having like newcomer kitchen programs for queer newcomers, having like specific like seniors, like queer seniors, like food bank services, having like a lot of like queer youth food programs. And I think that mapping part and like sharing part is so important, because when people get to see like examples, they can be inspired by other people and like be more confident to try something at their organization because someone else is doing it. Or they can like reach out and talk to that person. I think it's like so scary sometimes to like start a specifically like queer program at your organization, because there's not a lot of examples for that unless the organization itself is like entirely queer. But there are so many reasons why like it could be so beautiful to do that, like just foremost like addressing those higher food insecurity rates, but also like creating like a very deliberate, intentional space for queer folks to like do programming around food could be so special.
Nice. A lot was said in that answer, and I do just want, something did kind of pique my interest about the like division of labor in gardening and kitchens, and I was wondering if you meant gendered labor or how you would break that down.
Yeah, I was thinking about like gendered labor and also like my own experience of just being in kitchens and farms and gardens, and how, you know, like anywhere from like being in a garden and like being in like overalls and like having like unshaven like legs and like armpit hair and being around your coworkers and not being like a totally fine thing, and feeling safe in that. Or the division of labor where like often in those spaces when there's something like heavy or more like laborious to do, that like someone who identifies as a cis man is often asked first to like help with that, or like, you know, anyone that identifies as like a woman or a femme is like often like not like discounted from being able to like do that by themselves. And then like also I just think there's so many like examples of queerness in like plants and like growing food and like the ways you can grow food that are so beautiful to like share about and learn. I recently went to something called a queer food conference in Montreal, and there were several sessions about like the queerness of plants and how, you know, the anatomy of plants. Most plants are like identified as like bisexual,
Whoa.
both like sex organs, and I feel like there's like a lot of areas that we can explore more to like see how queerness is like replicated or expressed in nature. That would be so beautiful to learn about ourselves.
Yeah, that is really cool, and that is really important work as well that you guys are doing. I know that the theme of solidarity has kind of been throughout this conversation. I was just wondering if you could touch a little bit more on like what is the power of solidarity within, you know, our extremely individualistic system that we have that likes to divide and separate us and pin us against each other.
Yeah, I mean, as cheesy it is, as it is,
Say it.
like the experience of more of queer people is that they have their own chosen family, and I feel like that is so critical because we have this like deeper sense of community and need for community and to like create and like keep community around. So we center it in like everything that we do. And so that like having these spaces where queer people can come together, where you inherently understand each other and you don't have to like explain or teach someone something about your identity, is such a relief and like so much easier.